Is a quorum present.
Metzen,
Senator Metzen, would you like to move the minutes?
I think I'll so move. Yeah.
Okay,
very good.
Here. He's reviewed the minutes, and from the December 2nd, 2005 meeting, all those in favor of the minutes, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. The motion prevails. Next item of business, review and approve the resolutions establishing the subcommittees.
I like those moves, huh?
Madam Chair, members, I'm Greg Hubinger with the Legislative Coordinating Commission. There are two housekeeping matters for you this afternoon. The first is to reestablish the Subcommittee on Employee Relations, which is a 10-member body that reviews and provides interim approval to the state labor contracts and plans. This language is identical to what the Commission has adopted for the last several years, just updating the dates.
Speaker, I'd like to move the report.
Representative Sertich moves the report on the reestablishment of the Subcommittee on Labor Relations. Should we handle these separately, Mr. Hubinger? Okay. All those in favor of Representative Sertich's motion, please say aye.
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 Opposed, no. The motion prevails.
Madam Chair, the second resolution would reestablish the LCC Subcommittee on Administrative Rules. This subcommittee has four members and meets at the call of the chair or when five members of the legislature request a hearing. The language is the same as has been adopted for the last several years.
Senator Clark?
Move the resolution.
Senator Clark moves the resolution. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. The motion prevails. Okay. Review of the vacation leave donation policy.
Madam Chair and members, this proposed policy is new and would implement a program that would allow employees to donate their earned vacation leave to the sick leave account of a fellow employee who has a serious illness. The health issue has to be serious enough that the employee has had to have been away from work for at least 6 weeks and have exhausted their vacation and sick leave balances. This language is similar to what the House and the Senate have. But the Senate and House policies are quite different in that the House allows employees to donate 24 hours. This proposal is for 12 hours. The Senate allows employees to donate vacation and sick leave. So this is sort of down the middle of the road of what the House and the Senate have done.
Any discussion?
So moved if you
Senator Metzen moves the policy on donated vacation time and leave. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. The motion prevails.
Madam Chair, I would just add that when the staff of the House and the Senate and the LCC work later this fall to propose revisions to the LCC benefit book, I think we'll be talking about whether it's possible to have a policy that would apply across the legislature so that employees in the Senate and House could contribute to the accounts of each other when there's a need.
Thank you for that. All right, I think we are to the review of proposed biennial budgets for the joint legislative agencies and commissions.
Madam Chair, I think I'll start out as just to provide some background. So the joint legislative offices are a relatively small but important part of the legislature, we think. We employ approximately 140 staff compared to 220 in the Senate and 250 in the House. Our annual budget is about $13 million a year compared to $20 million for the Senate and $28 million for the House. So our budgets collectively represent about 22% of the legislature's budget. You have a packet in your, or a handout in your packet that shows all of the budgets for all of the joint offices. It's landscape, and says joint legislative agencies and legislative commission budget proposal for 08 and 09. The second page of that document has a summary of the requests from all of the various offices. It shows each office, the LCC base, which is the same as the governor's, and then proposed funding for 08 and 09 to the right of that. Before each of the directors provides a highlight for their respective budgets, I'd like to point out a couple of items that apply to all of the offices. About two-thirds of the way down that long list, there is a row that is labeled health and dental insurance increases for all general fund offices. This row reflects the cost to our offices of providing for the increased cost for health insurance premiums that we as the employer will be paying in fiscal years 08 and 09. We projected these increases based on what Dewar has indicated to expect in the next 2 years at 10% each year. The next two rows relate to a compensation study. As I think probably all of you know, the House and the Senate and the LCC all contracted with NCSL to conduct compensation studies for our employees during the last interim. While each of these studies was done independently, a common theme, I believe, what was recommended in each of those reports was that there be a merit pool established to provide salary increases for all legislative staff. The numbers included here reflect that recommendation for a merit pool and would provide that level of increase for all of the staff in the joint legislative agencies. We understand that that report has been received fairly recently and that leadership in the House and the Senate are still reviewing those reports and that the actual increases would have to be approved by House and Senate leadership for not only the House and Senate but for our staff as well. So as each of the directors goes through their respective budgets, you'll see personnel or compensation lines in their budgets. Those costs that are there reflect the current cost that they're paying now and don't reflect any proposed increases. If there aren't any questions about the general part.
Representative Murphy.
Madam Chair, Mr. Hubinger, could you go back to your very opening remarks where you were speaking of the Senate employees and the House employees, and you gave the numbers?
Madam Chair and Representative Murphy, the numbers that I have indicate that the joint legislative offices have about 140 employees. The Senate has 220 approximately, and the House 250.
Okay, let me get this.
I
was writing. 140 for the joint, for the commissions and so forth. 220 in the Senate and 250 in the House.
That's correct.
Thank you.
Any further questions at this point?
If not, I'll ask Michelle Timmons to talk about the Revisor's Office budget proposal.
And for folks who are presenting as well as the members, I think we plan on less than 5 minutes generally for those presentations, although I think both to the revisor and the legislative auditor, I think that a few more minutes might be warranted.
Madam Chair and members, thank you for the tape. I'm Michelle Timmons, the revisor of statutes. And I just wanted to start off by thanking the speaker for her kind note about all the work we've been doing in the revisor's office. And one of the questions I generally get is, what is the drafting activity like? And we're setting a new long session record. We're at about 3,800 bills drafted thus far. So that's running about a week ahead of the record we set in 2005.
So, Ms. Timmons, may I say again, thank you very much for all the work that your staff is doing.
And you're very welcome. I'm going to try to speak briefly today to the Revisor's Office budget request. In your packet, there are some handouts. There's a two-page summary. That's called Office of the Revisor of Statutes Budget Request Summary. And then there are some green pages attached to that that give you some additional information. And this is the presentation I gave to the Revisor's Subcommittee, but I'm not going to speak to that in the interest of time. The Revisor's Office has three main goals for the next biennium. One is that we want to complete this computer project that we've started. We wish to complete, extend, and get off that mainframe computer that we purchased back in 1971. And so that goal relates mostly to the one-time request for funding that we have. And then we have two main goals that relate to the operating budget. One is, now that we have the new system, we wish to maintain it. And then in addition, we need to continue to perform our core work. So you can see at the top of that summary, the one-time funding is about $509,000 is the request. Why? Well, one reason is we have a happy problem that people like Extend. We are getting requests for more House and Senate staff members to have access to Extend. That means we'll need to purchase some more licenses for the underlying software. The other main pieces that need to be developed are the programs for the administrative rules and the court rules. The good news there is that the new programming is for those is going very well. We can borrow a lot of the customized programs that we wrote for the legislative applications and redeploy them for the rules applications. But the big snake that we ran into is tables. We only have about 200 tables in the statutes, and we had quite a time converting those into the XML. Well, in the administrative rules, we have 7,200 tables. So we want to do a big push during this 2007 interim to do manual proofreading of those tables and fixing them up so we can convert that database. And that's a precursor to getting off that mainframe. Similarly, we need to develop the court rules. We don't believe that's going to be nearly as big of an effort. So now we're trying to migrate from the mainframe computer by June 30th of 08. We do have, and Representative Seifert will remember, the request for $1.5 million last biennium. And we have some money left of that, so the net that we think we need is this $509,000. Another question I always get asked is how much are we spending? With this additional money, we will spend about $6.5 million. And some of those other cost figures for other legislatures, Illinois finished their system about 2 years ago, and they spent around $7 million. Texas, Florida, and Kansas are all looking at about $10 million. So we're in the ballpark, maybe a little under for comparable systems. So that's really the reason for the one-time request. Then moving on to the second page of the summary, the next goal to maintain Extend has three major components: hardware, maintenance, and staffing. The hardware, we have a lot more hardware. Instead of 7 servers we used to have, we now have 26. We want to have ongoing proactive replacement of that hardware. It's also cost-effective because when you buy new hardware, you get 3, 4, or 5 years' worth of maintenance with that purchase, depending on the useful life of the equipment. And then the other thing that has really been on our minds post-Katrina and post the power outage at the end of the 05 special session is disaster recovery. So what we're planning to do is keep the most recently decommissioned equipment, stockpile it, drop the maintenance on it, but keep enough so we can cannibalize machines if we have to, and keep it ready in a pinch for disaster recovery. So I don't know where I'm going to put it yet, but we have grand plans to keep this equipment and have a cost-effective disaster recovery mechanism. This line item was kept artificially low during the fiscal crisis by supplementing hardware purchases with one-time money. Maintenance, we have a lot more commercial software, custom software, a lot more equipment. That means more maintenance. The good news here is it will go down. We'll save about $70,000 a year when we can finally get off that mainframe. Staffing, our highest priority need for staffing is a web programmer. I've redeployed all my resources, computer staff resources, into the main Extend project and the main Extend programs, and we're now short a web programmer. The director of the unit, Tim Orr, is doing a little bit of web programming. Most of it is being done with a consultant who is a great guy. He's kind of a Renaissance man, can do everything. That's the good news. The bad news is he costs $110 an hour. It would be more cost-effective to bring this in-house. And the numbers I'm showing you are for an entry-level programmer in plus benefits. So then, in addition to maintaining extend, we need to perform our core work. Another way that we've gotten through the fiscal difficulties is by keeping high vacancies in our production unit. The people who do that data entry of the bills do the first level proofreading. We have a 32% vacancy in that unit. We're limping through with temporary staff, which works fairly well as long as they stay through the end of the session, but it leaves us vulnerable at those very critical end-of-session times. And so I think over time it would be prudent to restore some of those positions. What's being requested here is one in fiscal year 08 and then a second in fiscal year 09 in advance of the next long session. Last but not least, we need to publish the law. We got a very low-cost bid way back in 1999. Thompson West really wanted to keep our business. We saved a lot of money. That, too, really helped us through the fiscal crisis, and we continued that contract for 7 years. But at some point, we are the public sector. We need to allow competition for that business. We did that. The cost has gone up, particularly for the statutes, which is the biggest cost driver in this line item, and that came in 25% higher. So those are the highlights of where the change items are, and if you have any other questions.
I think we'll, unless it's a really pressing question, we'll hold questions to the end of all the presentations just to keep moving along. Thank you, Ms. Timmons.
Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members, for the record, my name is Jim Nobles. I'm the legislative auditor, and I think I can sum up our situation and our budget request rather quickly. We suffered a lot of staff reductions during the budget cuts. We went from an organization of 79 to 62, and then we struggled to maintain 62, not just because of funding, but because of turnover. As you may have heard from other organizations, there is a very competitive market for the kinds of people we employ. Some of them are CPAs, accountants, other kind of financial analytical people. And so today, for example, if you look at the people in our financial audit division that started with us in this biennium, half of them are no longer with us. So we are really struggling to rebuild. Our budget request, though, is not necessarily to recoup the positions that were lost. I think we did a good job of economizing and cutting back. We reduced staff throughout the organization. I eliminated one of my deputy positions. I eliminated my confidential secretary position. And we cut throughout the organization to balance our budget. So we're not asking to recoup, but we are asking to stabilize. We will put forth our request as you direct us to in terms of what the base budget should be, and we will take those instructions from you and from Mr. Hubinger. The only added money that we are seeking is money that currently is paid to the state in audit fees from four organizations that we audit. That would be the State Fair, the Metropolitan Sports Facilities Commission, the Metropolitan Airports Commission, and the Mosquito Control District. They currently pay fees into the general fund, and those fees are not available to us. They amount to about $120,000 a year. I think it was reasonable at one point that those fees remain in the general fund, but given the budget cuts that we have suffered, we do have legislation pending that would change the law and allow those fees to go into our appropriation. But other than that, Madam Chair, again, we are in the position of trying to stabilize and rebuild. Thank you.
Mr. Nobles, if you'll just take back to your staff an appreciation of the work that they do and the situation that they've had to work under, I think we all across party lines greatly appreciate the work of your Office of Legislative Auditor and how it helps us guide our policy work.
Thank you, Madam Chair. We do appreciate that. Thank you.
Mr. Ms. LaFleur in the library.
Madam Chair, and for the record, I'm Robbie LaFleur. I'm the director of the Legislative Reference Library. I just celebrated my 21st year with the library, and my seventh year as director of the library. I could talk at great length and with much enthusiasm about the library and its services, but this presentation will be very short and highlight just the most essential needs of the library for the upcoming biennium. I can give you details, great details. I'm very good at giving information about anything in our budget. Last Wednesday, the members of the library subcommittee received a bit longer briefing. They were very supportive and approved the budget as requested, and I think Representative Murphy's words were, "Go forth." The handout I give you has two sides. The boxes on the budget sheet with photos include the points I feel are most important in the budget. There are details in the back side of the sheet. You'll find the number of staff members in the library, which has decreased from 18 to 13.5 since 2003. Our needed computer equipment is listed, and most importantly, there's a list of some of our project goals for the next biennium. Our top priority is hiring a programmer who can help with network administration and security-related needs in the library as well. Even though we don't like it, security tasks take more time and attention than just a few years ago, and we can't ignore them. We've been without this programmer position for 3.5 years since it was laid off. We have a backlog of programming tasks, and in general, we need to consolidate a lot of the services that we provide independently and improve our delivery technology and stop tweaking code that was written 3.5 years ago. We've already made terrific progress. We have added electronic delivery to all our services and reduced the staff we need for things like copying and mailing. We need this position to integrate a lot of the services. But just as an example of the programming needs, the library now tracks all the reports required by the legislature with a complex internal database. We read the session laws, track when the reports are due, send out letters, get reports, and archive them all electronically as well. With this database, we can tell you really quickly which reports have come in from which agencies over the years, which are due, which are even overdue. When we get a programmer so that we can get this converted to SQL and available on the web, then anybody could go in and do that, you know, in a blink and not have to depend on us to get it to you. We also plan to create access to many of the library's collections through subject-based web pages that will increase the use and the value of the materials we have. You could go to one page and find articles from the library's magazine collection, other online journals, reports from state agencies, and other materials and web items. And just a couple words about our computer needs. Core technology upgrades are now crucial. Technology has not stood still in the last 5 years, and the complexity of our systems and security needs have increased even as our budget has decreased. We abandoned our technology upgrade plan and deferred most of our technology purchases to stave off additional staff cuts. Our equipment budget line includes server replacements, and a list of the specific equipment we need is on the back of the sheet. And just as an aside, when I presented this in a short way at a Senate subcommittee, the only comment or question afterwards was Senator Pappas, who said, Mr. Chair, it says on here $25,000. Doesn't it usually say $25 million? This is nothing. So anyway, I appreciated that. And then just one other thing. There's a little box on that handout that I gave you that shows that there's a really modest bottom line, that even though our 2008 budget request is higher than 2007, it's still $38,000 less than we had in 2002. And then finally, there is a one-time request in the FY08 line to replace easy chairs in the library and to add outlets to the top of the tables and fix the aging lighting. And it's been 23 years since we moved over to the state office building, and I just have never been able to sort of squeeze out, keep thinking, at the end of some year, we'll have enough money to replace these chairs. And this actually is just all of those easy chairs up near the front of the library, and not, we're going to wait for another time to do all the chairs that are at the tables, which also need replacing. But So sort of as the living room of the legislature, our only joint public space, we need new chairs. But anyway, I'd be glad to answer any questions later or at any time for anybody.
Ms. LaFleur, thanks. You know that the library has a special place in my heart. I wish I got to visit more. Maybe we shouldn't let that out on the tape or people will be seeking me out there. We just want to acknowledge that the senators and the representatives around this table know the value of a dollar, and it seems like the library definitely knows the value of a dollar, that you've been deferring your maintenance for quite a while. So, thank you.
Madam Chair.
Yes?
Can we get a copy of the tape?
Senator Pogamiller, it's a historic moment for us. Yes. Mr. Martin.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm Larry Martin from the staff of the Legislative Commission on Pensions. The budget request that you have, which was prepared by the staff of the Pension Commission, has not yet been reviewed by the Pension Commission, is essentially the same level of effort. The only item that would be unusual or somewhat different is a small amount of money, $10,000 per fiscal year, for actuarial consultant work if the commission needs to have some actuarial work done and there is no other likely source to provide that work. The commission, as you know, functions essentially as a joint subcommittee on pensions and does process all the pension legislation prior to it going to the two governmental operations committees. At the moment, there are about 60 pension bills that are pending. I'd be happy to answer questions.
Mr. Martin, I'll just ask if Representative Murphy thinks this is going to be an appropriate budget amount for you.
Well, I think so if we can get a quorum.
Okay. Mr. Martin, thank you so much for all the work that you're doing. Mr. Hubinger.
Madam Chair and members, next up is the operating budget for the LCC. This provides the appropriation for the staff that helps staff this commission and the RCAC, at the Regents Candidate Advisory Council, the Comp Council, the Electric Energy Task Force, and the Claims Committee, to name a few. We also do the accounting and payroll for the joint legislative staff and help manage the budgets. We're proposing $766,000 each year, which is the same level effort. Madam Chair, the next page in the budget is for a category that's sort of a weird name, LCC Other. This is a pass-through account where the LCC acts as the fiscal agent on behalf of the legislature. The first line is for where we pay for the cost for the sign language interpreters, for people who provide sign language interpreting for hearings and meetings. Cynthia Weitzel is here from the Commission on Deaf and Hard of Hearing and wanted to say a few words, if she could.
Yes, that would be wonderful. Welcome to the committee.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair and members of the Commission. I'm deaf, I can't hear, but I'm bilingual, and I'm going to go ahead and try to speak for myself. If you can't hear me at any time, please let me know by just waving your hand. This meeting is really moving along, so I'm afraid, and I don't want to take up too much of your time. I'm so grateful just to have a place at the table this afternoon. I'm not even going to look at my notes. I just want to simply say that many of you around this table today have been involved with the Minnesota Commission serving deaf and hard of hearing for many years in its 20-year history. Many of you around this table today have been involved this year as chief authors of many of our bills. Several of you at this table were involved in being responsible to help for supporting the growth and expansion of funding for the commission last year, which provided the fundings needed to create my position, so that after 20 years it's no longer a one-person office but rather a three-person staff being able to better carry out our mission. What I want to say here this afternoon is I don't need to tell you the importance of communication. I think you've heard about that over and over and over again all through this session. Instead, I'd like to tell you a very quick little story about one single individual. The other day, we had our Deaf, Hard of Hearing and Deaf Blind Legislative Day. We had a great turnout. The number of people who showed up for our advocacy training had doubled compared to past years. One of those people was a woman in her mid-70s who had never been involved in any type of civic engagement in the past, a very strong woman who has overcome unimaginable odds, has never complained, has never thought that she had a voice or anything to offer as far as making a difference in her community. That person was my mother. She has never felt as though she had anything to offer, but I encouraged her to come. She came, and for the first time, she received advocacy training, how to take part. That afternoon, she met with the legislators from her district, and for the first time, shared her voice through the access of interpreting services. That woman, my mother, is now so excited and feeling so confident, a woman who's normally terribly shy and having no confidence whatsoever, now asked if she can help me train other deaf and hard of hearing seniors and thinks that they'll in turn want to help me to train all of our deaf and hard of hearing youth throughout the state, which is one of my objectives, being new to this position. It's going to have a ripple effect through our community, just that one individual having access for that one afternoon. And this is just one example of many why it's so important to continue and support communication access for your deaf and hard of hearing and deafblind constituents. Thank you for listening, and thank you for your time.
Well, I want to thank you for sharing that story with us today. It's very personal for you, but it's also, I think, very illustrative of what we've learned, many of us, in the previous weeks and years and months about the importance of communication with all Minnesotans and how very important it is that as we use the communication devices available to us, TV as well as in committee hearings, that we are very sensitive and aware to making sure all Minnesotans can participate in the legislative process. And please tell your mother thank you for coming to the Capitol. I hope she'll return many times.
You can count on it. Thank you very much, Madam Chair. Members?
All right.
Madam Chair, I'd also point out that the staff and members of that commission have been very helpful working with our staff and with staff in the House and Senate and encouraging us and helping us work through ways to that we can better support people who are deaf coming to the Capitol.
Thank you for that.
Madam Chair, that portion of the budget is increasing substantially as more people who are deaf come to the Capitol and request these kinds of services. The amounts that we're proposing reflect the cost that we've, or the expenses that we've actually paid in the last two fiscal years. This portion of the budget is also where the legislature pays its dues for NCSL and CSG. Those are increasing substantially. The amounts proposed are what the dues have been adopted for those two organizations. This is where we pay for the cost for the Region Candidate Advisory Council and its twin for MNSCU. And for the last line I wanted to point out in this part of the budget is the indirect costs. The Department of Finance charges all agencies, including the legislature, as a branch for using Semaphore and MAPS, which are the state accounting systems. The House and Senate don't use them a lot, but they do use them. And for some reason, the LCC has been receiving the bill. We've been ignoring that bill for the last 2 years, and I promised that we'd at least raise this issue with the LCC and either request an appropriation to pay for that cost or suggest some rider language so that the legislature would be exempt.
So, Mr. Hubbard, you're saying we're deadbeats with the Department of Finance right now. Thanks for making us aware of that.
Madam Chair, the next page is the budget for the Subcommittee on Employee Relations, that 10-member group that reviews and provides interim approval for labor contracts. That budget pays for the per diem and expenses for the members to attend and for parts of the two staff that support that. We're proposing the same level budget for that. Madam Chair, the next budget is the Great Lakes Commission. I believe Representative Huntley is here.
Welcome, Representative Huntley.
I've given you a handout, Madam Chair, and the Great Lakes Commission is an organization of the eight Great Lakes states plus the two Canadian provinces of Quebec and Toronto. We're federally chartered, and we work in the areas of research for the Great Lakes, coordinating policy amongst the eight states, two provinces, and then advocating for joint positions in Washington. One of the things we just passed is the Great Lakes Compact, which was an initiative of the Council of Great Lakes Governors. Most of the work that was actually done there was supplied by the Great Lakes Commission, since the governors have a very small staff. This year, the major issue, of course, is trying to coordinate the eight states on invasive species, which is a very controversial issue. If you look at our budget, about 4 years ago, the Great Lakes Commission raised their dues from $40,000 to $60,000. They had been at $40,000 for a long time. That was at the same time we had the budget crunch, so we never raised our budget. And so we went 4 years paying $40,000 per year in dues rather than $60,000. So we got about $80,000 behind, and what we've always done is if at the end of the year we didn't spend all our travel money, we sent that as part of our dues. So we're about $71,000 in arrears. On the one hand, it's kind of embarrassing. On the other hand, it's not unusual to have two or three states in this organization a little bit behind in their dues. Eventually, they all get back. So the budget includes paying our back dues and then the current $60,000.
Representative Huntley, should we pay our dues because otherwise we get more, is it spiny backed flea things or something from ballast water dumped in?
All sorts of things. Orange roughies, or not orange roughies, the roughies and the zebra mussels. Now it's a virus that's coming. I will say, however, that our dues are $60,000, but the Great Lakes Commission usually spends about twice that amount in the state of Minnesota by giving grants to various local organizations. So there's a payback.
Thank you.
The next budget is for the Mississippi River Parkway Commission, and the chair is here.
Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members. The Mississippi River Parkway Commission is a 15-member commission, and our goal is to promote, enhance, and preserve the Mississippi River Valley, and we're also the byway organization of the Great River Road. When you look at the sheet before you, there's probably three major change items to note. One is the per diem costs, and that reflects an addition of five citizen members representing geographical segments along the Mississippi River. So that's the increase you see there with respect to per diem costs. A second one that you might take note of is the change to $19,500 on the essentially administrative costs called professional technical services on the sheet before you. And that reflects the ending of a five-year federal seed grant that helped pay for administrative costs but is no longer available. I will mention that we do not have any full-time staff. We're largely a volunteer-based organization with a lot of good people providing important help. The third item I'll note, similar to the Great Lakes Commission you heard from Representative Huntley, we're behind in our dues. We pay $15,000 a year in dues to the National River Parkway Commission, and that helps coordinate the 10 river states in a common mission, among other things. And we have fallen behind in our dues, and the increase in that area reflects a catch-up in our national dues obligation. And I'm going to turn over to Andy Golfus here, who's the chair of the board of directors for the National Mississippi River Parkway Commission, also a member of our commission, and he'd just say a few words.
Thank you. I'll keep it short, but...
If you could just state your name for the tape.
Andy Golfus. I'm a member of the Mississippi River Parkway Commission in Minnesota, and I'm currently the national pilot, which is a nautical term, which confuses most people, thinking we're an Air Force wing of something. But the results of what we've asked for in the past and have received, our budget was reduced like all the other LCC groups right after we had gotten legislative approval to increase the size of our commission. So we had bad luck going at us from all directions 4 years ago. We have tried to maintain inclusion of all of our members, tried to keep up with our dues, but we have fallen behind significantly, roughly 2 years. Again, we pay partially where we can. The benefits that I can sum up for you, you have received a handout, and in that packet there are different things that we are responsible for. But basically, we are one of the arms that receives a small budget but brings in substantial federal funding that would not come to the state if it was not for the efforts of the commission, scenic byway designation that we brought. Those figures from 2000 to current are roughly $1,500,000 in federal funds on the Great River Road Scenic Byway federal dollars. That we figure is a good payback for the investment. The other part of what we try and do is to coordinate those activities of different groups along the Mississippi River in Minnesota. And as you're aware, and looking at the newspaper and headlines, there are a lot of issues concerning the Mississippi River development, scenic easements, protection. All of those seem to fall in our lap. And as a clearinghouse, we've been able to steer clear of some major issues. With that, I'll leave it to questions that you may have.
Senator Senjum, I don't know if you've been serving for a while or if this is a new appointment for you, but I don't know if you want to make any comment.
Madam Speaker and members, I joined the commission in 2003 as a new legislator and a new, certainly, a member of the commission. I subsequently served as chair, I think, for 2 or 3 years, and I have nothing but good things to say about the work of this commission. Dedicated members, good cause, working to enhance the river road, if you will, from the standpoint of tourism and vitality, and they just do a marvelous job.
Thank you. Thank you to both of you. I believe next is Mr. LaGrave and Mr. Senek from House and Senate TV. And we can just clear something up right now that the press asks all the time. You do not take direction from the Senate Majority Leader or the Speaker on what you put on TV, do you?
Madam Chair, that is correct. I'm Barry LaGrave. I'm the Director of House Public Information Services. We always look forward to input, but no, we don't take direction.
And sometimes we have to give that input, but I appreciate your jurisdiction to decide what to cover.
We look forward to it. I appreciate you making that clear for the record. Again, Barry LaGrave, Director of House Public Information. I'm here with Steve Senek to talk about page 13, the legislative television money, which is passed through the LCC budget. I'll just give a little history of the funding, and then Steve will talk about an exciting proposal, an opportunity that we have. Our base budget is $360,000 per year. We've been at that level for about 6 years. We use that money for House and Senate distribution or television distribution to the citizens. We use it in three ways. We establish a contract with Twin Cities Public Channel 17 for over-the-air broadcast in the Twin Cities area. We have a satellite feed to select Greater Minnesota cable systems. And then we also hire court reporters to do live closed captioning of all legislative television coverage on Channel 17. So those are three things we've been using the contract for. Our base funding, again, is at $360,000. We're looking for an increase to $600,000 per year, and that's as a result of an exciting proposal from the Minnesota Public Television Association to provide statewide public television coverage of the legislature. And I'll let Steve Senek explain that.
Madam Chair, my name is Steve Senek, Director of Senate Media Services. As you likely are all aware, in February of 2009, analog television goes away, and we are trying to find a new home for legislative television. The Minnesota Public Television Association approached us and said, we can carry this programming on the Minnesota Channel, which will be one of their four channels statewide, for $600,000 per year. The thrust of that is we would have better distribution in greater Minnesota. Currently, for example, we do not have distribution in Duluth. Every year we struggle to find distribution in greater Minnesota, likely problematic for many of the government access channels because they have competition for those channels. So this would improve our distribution, and certainly it would also help in terms of they would increase the number of hours.
Members' discussion to this? Representative Sertich.
Madam Speaker, just for the record, my mother can watch me up on the Iron Range. Representative Murphy, we do have this service up on the Iron Range.
And Mr. LeGrave, my children and mother thank you. Some weeks it's the only time they get to see us.
I understand.
We're on TV and give them the little ear tug and they see us. So I appreciate what you do. I think that the citizens of Duluth, Representative Murphy, should be able to see you on a regular basis. I think they'd be quite impressed with your work.
That's why I hardly ever talk.
Madam Chair and members, there is a two-sided information sheet in your packet that summarizes the proposal from the Minnesota Public Television Association.
Representative Murphy.
Madam Chair, I don't quite get it. Are they going to be, is everyone with a television set then, if they wanted to tune in, they could tune in to see the legislature and all the time live?
Madam Chair, Representative Murphy, what happens in 2009 is the FCC has said we want the current analog bandwidth for first responders, and so they're going to take that away. And so all of the television stations have to find a new location, and they're all doing so today. It will require us in the home to have a new receiver, you can purchase a box and receive digital broadcast signals today. What this would do is for those people in Duluth, they could watch in 2009 over the air without subscribing to cable legislative proceedings as they do in the Twin Cities today. I should also mention there will be cable distribution because the public television stations have worked out an agreement with cable stations that they also will carry all of their channels. So it's going to have both over the air and cable. It's a much better distribution for greater Minnesota residents.
Yeah, we're for that.
And Representative Seifert.
We don't have cable.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Would this then, this is going to be on public TV, not displacing their current programming, I'm assuming, is the agreement that we're not going to take Big Bird off and then all of a sudden we show up.
Or so, Cypher, you know how distressing that is when Big Bird's on and then we come on instead.
Terrorize our young people.
Madam Chair, Representative Cypher, what this does with the new technology, it allows them to take one channel and make four channels. And so what they're going to do is they're going to keep their PBS channels, and they all agreed in Minnesota that they're all going to carry the Minnesota channel. And we, Barry and I, in speaking with them, said, well, we want more hours. We're tired of getting kicked off at 5 o'clock. We have a few preemptions. It just isn't fair. And they said, okay, we'll extend it at least till 7 o'clock, possibly more. So we're going to have more hours and better service in greater Minnesota.
And when we're out of session, then they would...
They're going to carry what's currently on the Minnesota Channel, and that's nonprofit programming. And that's a very good point, because what is frustrating for us today, and why Minnesota is different than many other states, is we do not have a full-time legislature. Unlike C-SPAN, it's very difficult for us to go out and create a full-time cable network, because there's just not enough programming. So we have to look for partnerships, and this provides us a good partnership.
Representative Seifert, more opportunity to hear your oratory for the citizens of Minnesota.
And Madam Chair and members, part of the Minnesota Public Television proposal includes a possibility for interim hours. So if there were interim hearings of significance, their proposal includes interim hours when we're not in session. And finally, public television over the air and through cable, they are estimated they reach 97 to 98% of the citizens in the state. So it's a significant increase in our ability to reach the citizens.
Senator Pogemiller.
So what is on when the legislature is not on?
Mr. Senek.
Madam Chair, Mr. Majority Leader, currently on 17, it's when during the daytime it's weather. At the night, it's PBS programming. But what we're talking about here is a new channel that's called the Minnesota Channel, which actually exists today. And if you have a cable box, a digital cable box in your home, you probably receive it. And what they do is they've formed partnerships with many state agencies and others. And their model is we'll give you airtime if you pay us to produce the programming. And so several nonprofit organizations have different shows. So when the legislature in 2009 is not on, there will be nonprofit programming on a variety of different topics. Currently, however, it's a playback of PBS programming on 17.
Senator Senjum.
I still don't understand. I don't know if I need to understand, but I want to understand. So, you know, if we just bought a new TV at home, it certainly doesn't have a special box. Are we going to have to get a special box if we want to see Minnesota legislature in action? Is that it, or
is that
what's on the horizon here?
Yes.
Okay.
And Congress has said that for some income households, they're going to provide a check so you can go out and buy those boxes.
Okay.
I was told today they're under $100, but I don't know how much they are.
Representative Sertich, who is probably more technologically advanced than everyone else up here. Okay. Well, Representative Junkie and I are close behind.
Madam Chair, Mr. Minority Leader, it's not just the light, and I don't know if you got a high-def TV, flat screen. Hope you did.
Flat.
All right. And if it's high-def, too, I think you're in good shape because, and it's not just a matter of watching the legislature. You won't be able to watch anything without a new box by 2009. So it's a changeover that's happening soon for everybody with TV. You don't get Big Bird either. So it's going to be a big deal come 2009 for many folks.
Everyone going to be
with
that?
With a new TV,
you
do.
The Majority Leader would be happy to go shopping with anyone, the House Majority Leader, who needs to go out and purchase the box, which I think I'm going to need the help on.
Madam Chair.
Representative Murphy.
Thank you. I have a question about the budget request here, then. It's $600,000 for the fee to carry. Is that the fee, then, is in addition to the $600,000 that you're asking for each year?
No.
Mr. LeGrave.
Madam Chair, Representative Murphy, the $600,000 is the fee to get on the public TV stations around the state, the six public TV stations. On the rundown, there is a $560,000 one-time connection cost to connect the legislature and the six public TV stations. That request is within the MPTA's, I think it's a $12 or $13 million capital bonding request that they have before the legislature right now.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So, Representative Murphy.
To run your operations here.
Madam Chair.
Where is that? The legislative TV sheet here.
Mr. LeGrave.
Madam Chair, Representative Murphy, the cost for operating our television production facilities here and hiring the staff is part of the House budget and part of the Senate operating budget. So this proposal is just the cost to get our signal out to the Minnesota Public Television Association stations.
So that's back here.
No, actually, Madam Chair.
Mr. LeGrave.
Okay, so it's... The House has their operation, the Senate has their operation.
Madam Chair, Representative Murphy, that's correct.
So this is this. Thank you.
Okay. Any further discussion to the House-Senate TV proposal? Thank you, gentlemen, very much.
Thank you, members.
All right. Mr. Valine.
One intervening.
Okay.
Yep. Madam Chair, members, we have two non-general fund budgets within the LCC. One is from the Healthcare Access Fund for the Healthcare Access Commission. That commission has met rarely in the last year or two. I understand that it may be more active in the next biennium. If the funds are not used for meetings or purposes of that commission, the balances are divided in two and sent to House Research and Senate Council on Research to defray costs that their staff have in doing healthcare research.
All right. Mr. Valine.
Madam Chair and members, my name is John Valine. I'm the director for the Legislative Citizen Commission on Minnesota Resources. It's a new name. Do you all have this long sheet document in your packet?
Yep.
LCCMR at the top. Thank you. I wasn't quite sure if I when I dropped it off.
Greg, I found out later I was supposed to drop off the 20 copies, so thank you for making my copies.
At the end of your budget packet, you have the sheet labeled Legislative-Citizen Commission on Minnesota Resources. Many of you will recall the legislative task force that was formed after the 2005 session, and then the then LCMR staff was charged to staff that task force, and so we were in the business of, in sort of a strange, conflicted business of creating the reformed Legislative Citizen Commission on Minnesota Resources. It's been a rather strange couple of years. But the outcome has been good. We have, I think, the Legislative Citizen Commission on Minnesota Resources passed what I think is a very strong package of recommendations, which was sent to the House floor and passed by the House some time ago. We just missed the train on the Senate because, sir, when you adjusted, you accelerated your target schedules, your targets for deadlines. We were poised to go to Senate Finance, and now we're just waiting. Now we're on the sidetrack waiting until some of that's done, which is all fine. It's not a particular problem, but we would have really, really had a great whistle stop. At any rate, our budget is now a reflection of this new organization. The top line, the full-time staff, represents an addition of one to our current complement. What that does is it brings us back to where we were in 1989 through 2003. And interesting that we're looking at the total biennial budget proposed here is a little over $1.2 million, and that's what the commission was operating on back in 2001. So we're basically coming back to several years later, the same amount. Now, because we are not in the general fund, this is entirely funded by the Environment Natural Resources Trust Fund, we don't get to participate in that general fund pool for merit increases that Greg Hubinger described a little earlier. He has an item there, a lump item for all of LCC. We don't get to participate in that. And so we have to put any merit or COLA into our salary line. So that salary line includes a new position for outreach and communications, which was highly recommended, almost urgently recommended by this legislative task force that met for during 2005 and 2006, to increase the citizens' knowledge of the affairs of their Environment and Natural Resources Trust Fund. They voted on that constitutional question in 88 and again in 92 and 98. And so this level reflects the addition of the new position, which will also help in doing some of the analysis, program evaluation, and other elements that you see on this large legal size sheet. It's sort of I consider that sort of a list of deliverables. And, of course, there are many, many activities which could be outlined underneath each of those headings, but That's our. We do more than just recommend a bunch of money. There's a lot behind it, a strategic plan, and the third line down, other benefits, and the next line, a couple lines down further, that talk about travel and subsistence in state. That's where you find the per diem payments. That's in the other benefits. And the travel and subsistence line down below is the other expenses for travel and subsistence. When we have meetings, the legislators are authorized their per diem and plus their mileage and a hotel if it's a two-day meeting or a trip somewhere. And the new seven Citizen Commission members are also authorized their per diem and their mileage and their hotel, the same as legislators, plus whatever their meal allowance, whatever their meal charges happen to be during a day's meeting or a two-day meeting. And so even though the gross number is down from 20 to 17, because the seven citizens who now make up the 17-member commission actually get a higher expense ratio. Now, we also, I need to comment that we had to We were admonished to get our budget recommendations into the legislature so it could be introduced early in January, and we did that, which meant we had to do this budgeting in November and bring it to the commission and have it passed and approved by the commission. We didn't know that the per diem rates were going to change, so this is budgeted on the old per diem rates. We also didn't know the result, going back to the top line for the staff, we didn't know the result of that compensation study. So any changes to compensation to adjust for range and so forth, we're just going to have to find a way somewhere in this number to accommodate it. I would point out, too, that top line, again, is always qualified by a phrase, subject to LCC action. So if we budgeted 2.5%, for example, and you only authorized for LCC 2%, then we would take 2%. We certainly don't play around with that at all. We do exactly what the LCC levels are. Those are kind of the highlights in the change levels. There's another couple little change levels down below. One is travel and subsistence outstate, $3,500. The commission members themselves, while we were presenting the budget, increased the budget by this amount to say, we want the staff of the commission getting out to conferences to improve your professional knowledge about natural resources and making connections in other states around the country, and that's an area that had suffered drastically under former budgets. One more point, and that is the statute under which we operate, statutes 116P, limit us to a 4% administrative cost, and we are under that cap. That 4% would be $915,000 per year. So you can see we're almost $300,000 under the 4% cap. We try to manage frugally.
Mr. Boleyn, you brought up per diem, so I'll just ask, how do you choose when the House and Senate have different rates, who to key off of?
Which has happened
in the past as well.
Madam Chair and members, we pay the House what the House members are entitled to as House members, and the Senate members what the Senate members are entitled to as Senate members.
How about the citizen members?
They get the amount prescribed in statute for...
55.
Yeah, I think it's $55 currently. And that's a number that hasn't changed for a while, too, I believe.
Okay.
So that's prescribed for them.
Thank you for that. Any further questions? Senator Senjum.
Madam Speaker and Mr. Boleyn, just to understand, I think you've answered it, but so if I were on your commission with respect to per diem, that my per diem would not come out of a Senate budget, it would come out of yours for the day that I was on an LCC MR trip?
Mr. Boleyn.
Madam Chair, you're correct, and thank you for getting the acronym correct, LCCMR. I'm still stumbling over the old, whether it's LC squared or LCMR. Thank you for doing that. You are correct. You would get paid for LCCMR activities out of the LCCMR budget, your per diem and hotel and mileage.
Madam Chair.
Representative Junkie.
And to that point, I think it's something we need to check out because serving on the Chicano Latino Affairs Council, we do handle that differently in that they pay the citizen members of that. The legislative members have to come to the Speaker's office or Majority Leader's office to get their pay. So that is not handled the same way or consistently, and maybe something staff or someone should be checking out for us on that, or for you. Someone's doing it different.
Madam Chair?
Well, Mr. Boleyn.
I would submit, Madam Chair, Representative Junkie, we've been doing it exactly this way since 1963. I know the record. I've actually done the historical search, and it started here in 1974. So we've been doing it this way for that long. I was not aware that there was a different practice in other areas.
Okay. Thank you for that. Members, we could proceed in a couple ways. We could just have heard the requests and let them sit, or we could take a vote to ratify the budgets that were proposed before us. It can be helpful to the LCC in terms of their presentations before House and Senate committees. If we ratify their budget, it also may not mean a thing to other senators and representatives. Senator Clark, you look like you'd like to say something.
Oh, I was just thinking, Madam Chair, we're done with our budget.
That's what we know that.
So I thought you did.
Yeah.
Would it help you?
Would it help you?
I I don't know, it's up to the will of the committee. I mean, having heard it, I think is doing the due diligence we need to do in terms of knowing what the LCC proposal is. Sarah Pogonola.
And when the session's over, this group actually then sets the budgets, right?
Right. We take, right, an action to actually set the budget. So there will be a action taken at a later time. So maybe we should just let this sit. Does anyone else have any of the members have any other business? Seeing no other business before us, the meeting is adjourned.